Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome back Fred Schenkelberg. Fred, how you doing?
Hey, pretty good, James. It's springtime here. I'm out, but I'm sure my weather is much more stable than yours is.
Yeah, absolutely. I golfed last night in a t-shirt the whole night, but okay. I wake up this morning and it was 6 degrees Celsius. So it doesn't know what it wants to do right now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, there's something to be said for predictability and stability and all those things, not only in the weather, but in for the systems we work with too.
Absolutely. It's vitally important that we get that predictability, that consistency allows us to budget better, to manufacture better. It does all those wonderful things for us. You know, if the weather cooperated, maybe I could actually predict when I'm actually going to be able to get out and golf again.
Well, good luck on that.
Yeah, we'll need it. Fred, the one thing I wanted to talk to you about today is failure mechanisms. So there might be some confusion around what is a failure mode, a failure mechanism, and all these other failure terms that we have in our profession. So what I wanted to do today is focus on the failure mechanism. So can you explain what exactly a failure mechanism is?
No. The simplest way to think of it is when something's not doing what we think it should be doing, when there's a break in our expectation, or in a product world, in your the stuff you use at home, you go out to your car and it doesn't start, that's a failure. Failure is when we don't get the functionality that we expect. So in a system or an equipment, it doesn't put the label on the bottle or doesn't put it on correctly. Now that term in and of itself, just one half of what you asked me about, there's plenty of debate about what is a failure. And so a failure mechanism is harder to define when we don't even know what a failure is in a lot of cases, because there's some things where it's a puff of smoke and it starts a fire or it stops dead, doesn't produce anymore. Well, we can all agree that that's a failure. If it's on the margin of the tolerance of performance that it's supposed to do, and it's okay, but not exactly what we want to have happen, some customers will call that a failure. And others will say, well, it's in spec. And a small deviation will put it across the line, and then technically it's a failure, and others will say, well, it's close enough. So there's that part there.
It's funny you mention that, because one of the first things you have to do in an RCM analysis is to define what is the operating performance you expect from that asset. So if we need it to pump 300 gallons per minute to keep up, and it pumps 299.5, that's technically a failure.
That's right. And you can argue that it's measurement error, that it's close enough, and all these other things. It takes me back to the concepts Taguchi talked about, this loss function, where if you're on target, if the performance of your equipment is hitting the center of your optimum performance parameters, and it's outputting, let's say the spec was no 350 gallons per minute, but you're getting 300, which is technically within specification, you're just a half gallon away from being technically out. The issue is that it's a sliding scale, and the product you're producing or the performance of that pump or the efficiency of your system are degraded every gallon that you're away from the optimal target that it's designed for. So what Taguchi's saying is that you should aim to be on target. And one of the issues that he found and we recognize in the United States is we produce in spec, even though that we're an eyebrow hair away from being out of spec. And what Taguchi was arguing was that this failure is not a hard line, because we have measurement error, we have uncertainty in how we judge a failure. There was uncertainty in setting those specifications. So we really should be focusing on getting it on target, right? The whole issue of failure is the sliding scale. It's either works or doesn't work. And we'll use the very, very fundamental thing. I go turn the key in my car and the engine doesn't start. I can't get to where I'm going. I'm going to call that a failure, a hard failure. Sure, it gets fuzzy real fast, but let's define failure as it doesn't do what we expect it to do.
It's that performance characteristic that is not meeting, whether it's a primary, such as delivering X amount of gallons per minute, or a secondary, such as not leaking.
Yeah. I'm thinking of my car analogy here. I'm really hoping that the cause of the non-starting was that there's a pile of fuel on the pavement underneath it. That would be bad. So the mechanism part, that's a bit easier to explain. And usually I shorten it to it's the physical or chemical fundamental element that initiated the failure, the chain of events that led to the failure. And so if you remember in root cause analysis stuff, and we did an episode on that, I believe, is the need to drive towards root cause analysis. We should probably link back to that discussion. But when you're at a piece of equipment and you're trying to diagnose, well, what should I fix? You're actually looking for the root cause, which is what was the mechanism that caused the failure? And so if I identify a symptom that this belt is loose or this belt came off of its shiv, if I simply replace the belt and put it back in place, I have fixed the symptom, which sometimes we would call a failure mode. But I didn't ask the next question, which ties into the what a failure mechanism is, well, why did it come off of that pulley? Why did it come out of that groove? Why did it loosen? Why did it do what it did? Now, from there, it could be tension. It could be the vibration caused the tensioning to degrade over time. It could be a shock. Say, I've actually seen this happen once where a forklift actually hit a piece of equipment and knocked it out of alignment and the belts came off. I mean, there's a number of things that could have initiated the problem. It could be human error. It could be mechanical wear. And that list goes on and on and on. So the mechanism is if this initiating event did not occur, the failure would not occur. So if I eliminate the fundamental cause, if I retard or eliminate corrosion with preventative maintenance, if I reduce wear in a motor by lubrication or in a chain gearbox, for example, if I minimize and reduce the amount of wear that it sees, the chance that it'll seize or the chance that it'll lose efficiency goes significantly down. So I stay away from it actually exhibiting symptoms of a failure that I can observe. So sometimes failure mechanisms are visible. They are very, very similar to a symptom. But oftentimes, they're buried in the material set. They're buried in the design. Their alignment issues, for example, or may not obviously be visible, yet we see the symptom of the vibration and the gearbox wearing out very fast. To me, a failure mechanism is the chemistry or the physics or the fundamental elements that initiate the chain of events that lead to the failure mode, which is the symptoms that we observe.
You know, I have this book. I sit on my desk because in our profession, there's 1,001 acronyms / technical terms that never make any sense. So the book I got is The Professional's Guide to Maintenance and Reliability Terminology. When I look up failure mechanism in here, what I get is the physical, chemical, electrical, thermal, or other process which results in the failure. So it's exactly what you said. It's what originally initiated or instigated that failure. And what you saw was the failure mode, which if I look at that one, it says the manner in which the failure occurs. In other words, the symptom that you see.
That's right. Good. At least the research I've got is consistent with what I say and what you brought up. Now, going back to the root cause, though, if I know it's corrosion that led to the leak occurring, say in my car, was that a design error or was that a mechanical abrasion problem? Or, you know, so there's a number of different ways that there's underlying causes for that happen, including human error in the design process. In the, say, the last maintenance cycle, I didn't button it up correctly or didn't do the alignment correctly. So there's the processes we use to design, install, and maintain equipment can introduce variability into the process. So those can also be part of that root cause that then allows a failure mechanism to take hold. It's a part of that chain of events that we use to analyze what's going on with our systems, and it's one term in our lexicon, but it allows us to go after asking the right questions. If we understand the failure mechanism, we usually then can turn it on and off. We can cause the failure to occur or not to occur at will, which is a sign that we understand it. But it's not the end of the game. Just because we know the mechanism doesn't mean we're done. There's usually some reason that mechanism exists. And sometimes it's fundamental to the material sets and the capability of our equipment. And other times it's an error somewhere along the process where we're not optimizing our capability with material sets and designs.
There's a wide range of them. So we're not really able to describe what types there are out there. We talked about physical, chemical, electrical, thermal, human, but it's very difficult to limit it because if you think about it, it's almost limitless to different types of mechanisms that are out there, correct?
Oh, definitely. You really go crazy. There's direct lightning strikes that usually wreaks havoc on pretty much anything it touches. I was in a brainstorm once and we were asked to come up with all of the different ways that our product could fail. And somebody, well, a supernova, that would cause it to fail. It's a brainstorm, so we can't criticize it, but it did get a chuckle. But there are, look at your smartphone. If we think about it, there are probably a couple hundred thousand ways it can fail. When you get into the details of it, right? It could be capacitor C102 is misplaced or misaligned, and so it's going to go open sooner than later. Or just the capacitor itself, its construction. There's probably 15, 20 steps in creating the capacitance that it's needed for that circuit. And if any one of those steps goes wrong, it'll wear out faster, it'll drift faster, it'll have a catastrophic failure, have a dielectric breakdown. That's just one component. And then you multiply that by the couple hundred components in there and all of the different environments we put it in. Yes, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of ways. Pretty much anything can fail. Now, we don't care about all of those.
No, you care about the most important ones, the ones you want to actually work to prevent from occurring.
That's right. And so part of what we do in the reliability world is we try to focus on the ones that are going to occur often and affect every product or occur every day, the things that are frequent. And we're also interested in the ones that have the most consequence, like a bottling plant. If a bottle gets jammed and it takes you a few seconds to clear it out and you're back up and running, if it occurred every 3 seconds, you probably would take more steps to figure out what's going on here. What's causing this to occur? Which guiding rail is out of alignment, for example, or is the belt speed too fast or whatever it is. But if it only occurred once a week, we probably really wouldn't care. Yet if something jammed and caused a fire to occur and took out the equipment for a week, we would really care. And so the consequence part really comes into play. So the idea of an FMEA or a risk analysis or hazard analysis touches on understanding the failure mechanisms and identifying which ones are the ones we need to pay attention to. So it's a prioritization process. Now, it gets mixed with failure modes and failure mechanisms, but we can do things about failure mechanisms. Failure modes guide us to which mechanisms we need to deal with. It's the way I think of it. It's hard to fix a symptom. It's easier to fix a process when you're dealing with the mechanisms.
Yeah, and the failure mechanisms obviously are specific to the type of component there. So if you think of a metal component, you might have corrosion, cracking, fatigue, fracture, stuff like that. Where if you look at an electrical component, you might have dielectric breakdown, induced current, voltage drops. You might have all those other things. And if you get to plastics, well, there's a whole other gamut of things that could do that, right? So you could have shrinking, spiraling, you could have all kinds of wonderful stuff like that. So you really have to understand what that failure mode is telling you so you can then understand what the failure mechanism is. Once we understand that, then we can look at what we can do to prevent it.
Whether it's design it out or mitigate it or the maintenance we do to take care of it. The other place that mechanisms come into play, I'll use an example of a piece of equipment I work on as a medical device, and they had a small, think of it like a grain of wheat, little bulb, and it was made out of titanium. And they had this intricate, really small laser welder that they put this radioactive material in this little cylinder and then welded a cap onto it. And the way it was delivered, it was exposed to the part, the tumor basically it was treating, and it went down a metal tube and it wore right on that weld. And so there was a lot of uncertainty as to how fast that would wear. So the failure mechanism was known. It was metal on metal wear because this thing was moving across the tube and had to change direction. And at those points, it would abrade. And so the question was, how many trips can it make before it wears through the limit of that cylinder and we expose the radioactive material to the patient? And so the same thing happens in gears and anything that's moving and has metal on metal friction is we're going to get wear. So in this case, it was particularly catastrophic if it failed. If this radioactive material got loose in the wrong time, it would be catastrophic. Don't think Hiroshima, it was micrograms. Yeah, no, but it would be bad for the patient that got exposed to this and the staff that gets exposed to it. What we did is we figured out, well, let's just manipulate this and then measure the wear. And so we used an atomic force probe microscope, basically, that measured the surface in very accurately. And then we cycled it through this device a couple hundred times. And then we measured it again and repeated that about 10 times. And so we were able to plot the rate of wear per use. And the same thing happens in our equipment. If you're looking at an item that's got a chain drive to it, well, chain stretch. And we know eventually that the stretch gets too big and then we lose either safety or functionality or efficiency of our system. We've got to replace the chain. And so we can measure the chain stretch at various points in time and then plot that trend and get a prediction basically as to when we need to replace it. But it's understanding that whether it's the wear, the metal on metal wear per trip in this medical device, or every hour of operation with load, we're going to stretch the chain. It's those fundamental mechanisms and understanding them that allows us to do predictive maintenance in a very accurate way.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
You need to fully understand them to do a proper root cause analysis, define your maintenance strategy, validate that your strategy will be effective and not just a time and money suck. It's vitally important.
So it is. Yeah, definitely.
So for those that are just learning about failure mechanisms and aren't really sure if they fully understand or they want to explore it a bit more to get a bit more comfortable with it, what is any words of wisdom you'd want to share with them regarding failure mechanisms?
I'd say stick to those definitions that you mentioned early on and that we talked about. Is you can do something about a mechanism. If you understand the underlying mechanism of what's causing the symptoms that you see that we're calling a failure, that we define as a failure. If you know you got a failure, it's like telling your team to work harder, you know, just put a big banner up and say, work harder, work harder, work harder, or even work smarter. Well, what do I do different than what I'm doing now? If I understand the part of my work that's not efficient, or if I understand the failure mechanism, then I have a chance to do something different to affect that. Symptoms and modes and stuff is part of the process. And that's where I'm kind of hesitant a little bit, and it's not going to be very succinct. When you get to an understanding of what the fundamental science is that's causing the symptoms that you see, then you're in a position to do something about it. And that's what we need to drive to.
Couldn't agree more. We got to drive down to that level to make sure we're dealing with the right issues. Now, do you have any resources on failure mechanisms by chance?
I don't, not really. It's a good idea. I think I've talked about failure modes and failure mechanisms briefly when talking about FMEAs in the past and a variety of articles or formats and stuff, but not explicitly. I know that there's a handful of good references and books. More the stuff I've usually used has been in the electronics world, where they talk about electromigration and the physics of failure models that describe that. And there's a handful of references out there on that. I know one. It's a good spot to go. It's called WARP. WARP. And James, I'll have to send you the link to it because I don't remember it offhand. But it was a collection of physics of failure models, the technical papers that talked about, you know, metal fatigue or softening or crack initiation mechanisms or metal diffusion issues of dissimilar metals. And it also talked a lot about it. Electronics and the different types of things that affect various kinds of technologies. The last I looked at it was a couple months ago, and it had 400 or 500 identified different failure mechanisms, because that's what you use to model for physics of failure models. And it's a really good resource to get a sense of the fundamental science characteristics of what we're looking for. And so if it might not have exactly what you need for your particular circumstance, but it certainly is a great place to check out every now and then to see the level of understanding we have of some of the mechanisms that are out there.
I'll definitely have to get into that resource and take a good look at it, because it sounds interesting. Now, the one thing that you did mention is that the fact that you don't have anything that explains some failure mechanisms from failure modes and that sort of thing. So I'm thinking that might be a good blog post or giveaway to work through, is defining the different failure definitions, modes, categories, all that wonderful stuff, and kind of doing a flow chart to show people where they fit in the overall process and why do you need them.
I've been pulling out a bunch of different references and stuff that talk about, and they often have different definitions in the standards. And I ran into one of them that had a really interesting, it was like a mind map of different terms. And I was thinking the same thing, James, is to pull out one of those, and I could pick the one on failure. It starts with the word failure, and then it has all the adjectives around it and how they relate to each other. So that may make a very interesting blog post. And because I'm going through that process now myself as I'm compiling a dictionary, or I should call it a compendium at this point. But yeah, that's a great idea. I'll have to look into that.
Well, Fred, as usual, I learned a ton about failure mechanisms. You're always a wealth of knowledge, so it's always great speaking with you. Now, where can people find out more about you? What are you up to at the near future? Anything on the horizon?
Well, I've got a tentative class coming up on design for reliability for mechanical engineers, which I should probably include failure mechanisms, this whole discussion on it. I could get some mileage out of this blog post we're talking about. So that's in late June, I believe, in Singapore. And I've got a conference in Australia, or a seminar. I'm an invited speaker. I think it's July 10th or 10th to 12th, something like that. And it's being sponsored by a reliability program that's just getting started at UCLA. And it's co-sponsored by the Australian military. And so it's looking like it's going to be a pretty interesting get-together. And again, talking about reliability assessments, reliability programs, how do you use the right tools, you get value out of it, not just check the box kind of stuff. So a busy start to the summer for me. Not too much time for golfing, unfortunately.
But Fred, as always, it's been a pleasure. I'm not going to keep you any longer. So thank you again. I'm sure our audience learned more, and I did. And I'm looking forward to pulling together this failure mechanism, failure definition post with you. So that should be fun.
All right, cool. Thanks, James.
Thanks. Bye.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.